Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in a little bit, we'll run through all the teams in the Southern Conference as I give you the big storyline for the 2021 season in the SoCon for each team. With the SoCon college football season 5 weeks away from tomorrow, the Citadel will get underway against Coastal Carolina 5 weeks from tomorrow. They held their media day yesterday in North Carolina. I was watching the videos yesterday, hearing from all the coaches, getting excited, looking forward to it, getting ready to go. So we'll preview all the SoCon teams coming up. Plus, is Texas to blame for potentially ending the Big 12? We'll get to that coming up as well. We've been talking a lot about the Olympics today in the first hour of the afternoon, of course, with the Simone Biles story. And Jeremy Schilling joined us as well to talk about Olympic golf last hour. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, just search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can also find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click our show page, find the podcast there. Or if you download our free app by searching ESPN Charleston in the App Store, you can also find the podcast available there through the app. Talking about the Olympic golf with Jeremy, I think that's part of the issue with the Olympics. The ratings have been cut in half compared to the last two Olympics. The ratings are 50% now of what they were in 2016, 2012. And whenever we talk about ratings, you always have to give the disclaimer that things are just different now than they were back then. In fact, that's what Bob Bowlsby, commissioner of the Big 12, was talking about when he did not fear a conference realignment just in the last 2 weeks. Because as he said, the big thing was all because of the realignment was always driven by the TV deals and the different cable networks and everything. And that's no longer the case because people aren't watching cable like they used to. And then it turns out we still got realignment anyways. But the point being, we know there's a bunch of cord cutters now. It's different. You consume your entertainment in different ways. So the ratings are going to be down across the board. But they are down 50% for the Olympics this year. And I think there's a lot that goes into it. Part of it, though, is just it's hard to know when, what is on when or where to find it, and then B, just the time, right? Like golf is going to start at 6:30 tonight, so that's good. You can watch primetime golf tonight before you go to bed. But then it goes to 3:30. I mean, who's staying up and watching that? Plus, also, like with the Simone Biles stuff yesterday, when that happened in the news because of the internet, we got wind of it yesterday morning in real time. But because of the coverage, they were showing gymnastics on a tape delay. So NBC said, wait 12 hours. Right? When we air that tonight to get the scoop on Simone Biles, like, well, we don't need to. This isn't 1990. We don't need to wait 12 hours anymore. We'll go online and get the news. So there's a lot of that, too, about the tape delay because of the different time zones and different events and what's best for TV. You want certain events at certain times, but it's awkward. I don't think people care to watch the Olympics on tape delay when you can find the results online. You know, like I'm one of those, if I can't watch a game, of course I'm going to record it. But I will try to avoid the score. You know, like my father does it a lot where he watches things on tape delay. But I think even he's okay finding out the score, he still then wants to see how it happens. For me, if I find out the score, it's like, well, that defeats the purpose. I don't need to sit down and watch the game. A lot of times, if that's the case, I'll watch the end. Okay, well, how did it end? Right? I know so-and-so won the game. This was the final score, so I don't need to see the first three quarters of the football game or the basketball. Right? Let me just watch the fourth quarter. Let's see how it actually ended. Where was the drama? Right? What was the big play at the end that sealed the deal? But when you already know the outcome, you know, what do you got to sit down and watch it for? Now, when it comes to the Olympics, these Olympic athletes are pulling off like tremendous athletic feats. I mean, they're the best in the world at what they do. So maybe regardless of the results, you still want to actually see them do it. I think that plays into it. And then another part of it all is that for a lot of these sports, maybe I'm just the ignorant, you know, American sports fan, but a lot of these sports, I don't even know how they work. I don't know what's going on. Like rugby, I enjoy watching. In fact, one of my cousins played college rugby. I used to play the video game as a kid. I didn't know the rules, but it was fun to play. A buddy of mine always used to play the video game. I watch rugby. Like, it's entertaining to watch, but I don't actually know the rules. I don't know what's going on out there. I don't know what's happening. It's fun to watch as people, like, pile up on each other and tackling and the way they shuffle the ball around to each other. But I don't know what's actually happening. Right? Like, handball seems cool, but I don't really know the rules. I was watching badminton the other day. That was wild. I was watching the equestrian or horse, whatever the ones are with the horse. I had no idea what was going on. We were out to lunch watching this. Like, is anything going to happen? The horse was just prancing around a square. I didn't know what that was. I thought they were supposed to be, like, hurtling and doing different. I didn't know what was going on. The horse was just, like, dancing. It was really odd. And it would change its gait. It was, like, pretty much dancing around. It would do one move, and then it'd change and do, like, another dance move, and people would critique. I had no idea what that was. So my thought was, watching these sports, I don't know what's going on in these sports. I don't know what I'm watching. Growing up, I used to love pop-up video on VH1, and it'd give you interesting tidbits. And that's what we need for the Olympics. Because if the broadcasters don't want to explain it to you, right now they teach you as a broadcaster that you should probably broadcast like the lowest denominator, right? Like assume everybody watching doesn't know very much about the sport or the team. Because you could be use me an example, I guess, doing Citadel games. Who knows? Maybe there's an alumnus of the Citadel tuning in or listening to a football game for the first time in years. They don't follow the school, but you know they went to the Citadel and they're checking in and they don't follow it too closely. You have to break it down so that anybody could be listening for the first time. They know what's going on. They understand the pieces, the players involved, the storylines, the teams, why it's important, this and that. That's what you have to do. Whether it's somebody who listens or follows the team, has season tickets to go to every game, or someone who hasn't watched that team in 10 years. Just like when you sit down to watch college football on a Saturday, you could be watching Boise State for the first time all year. You want to know, like, oh, who are their players? Why is that guy really good? Why have they struggled this year? How are they doing this year? Right? So with the Olympics, same idea. It should be a very educational broadcast, is what I guess I'm saying. When you watch handball, they should be breaking it down like, well, okay, that's why it was a point. Here's the rule for that. This is what happened. Instead of the X's and O's, like, I don't know what they're talking about. So let's get a little pop-up video. If the broadcasters aren't going to explain it, we'll have things pop up on the screen, and they'll tell you why that was a point, what the rule is, what it's called, and why it's the rule, or what the rule actually is, which countries are the best, where do the sport, all this stuff. Give me little anecdotes, little tidbits, interesting pieces of information as I watch, and then I can really get into it. But I'll be honest, I haven't watched much of the Olympics so far this year. Here and there, as I'm flipping through the channels, I was watching a little skateboarding the other night. But as I've made it known before, I'm not the biggest Olympic guy. Joe, what about you? Have you been watching, how much of the Olympics have you been watching so far?
Haven't been watching a lot of it because of my work schedule, but yesterday, after the show, while I was doing some work in the WJNI studio, and of course there's a TV set in there, I did catch some of the synchronized diving. And man, that is something you really have to be in sync with somebody else, and you really have to have your stuff together.
Yeah, I didn't even know this was a thing, but that sounds crazy. How many, is it just two? Like, what are the teams? Two people at a time?
Yeah, it's two people at a time, and they have to match each other's move, you know, to the nanosecond. And of course, you have to keep the splash to a minimum.
Yeah, which is wild. The timing has to be impeccable. You and another person, you have to do the dive and nail it perfectly. I can only imagine the amount of like practice or training to get on the exact same page. Get on the same millisecond, right? You're nailing it. You're doing the same thing. You're both tumbling at the same time. I didn't even know that was a sport or a part of the Olympics. I'll have to sit down and watch that. That is crazy. Right? You got to get some twins. They always say twins are like on the same wavelength. If you ever got a team of twins, they'd be the most dominant Olympic tandem at that sport because they're on the same. They know exactly. They don't have to communicate. They know when they're about to leap off the diving board and when they're going to tumble and do this and that and extend to go into the water. That's what you got to get. Find yourself some twins who can dive, and then they can win. Actually, I'm looking here. These divers almost look like twins. The synchronized divers that won the silver medal. I think those are the American divers. I see an interview here on today.com.
Yeah, and our two gals took the silver in that one.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, China finished first, and Mexico won the bronze.
Okay. Last I checked, we are leading the medal count. You're number one ahead of China and Japan, last I saw. So that's good. And the basketball team beat Iran, no surprise there. So getting back in the winning ways. All right, I meant to get to this earlier. Texas with the Big 12. We know about Texas, Oklahoma. We're on our way to getting them in the SEC. And then the concern or the idea, the belief is that afterwards, there's not going to be a Big 12 anymore. Here is Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports on his podcast yesterday talking about the blood that is on the hands of Texas for what they've done over the past decade and moving forward now to the Big 12 Conference.
This move is Texas acknowledging what we've seen on the field for the last decade, that Texas ain't special. Texas is just like everybody else. And the most interesting part to the people that Texas antagonized and the most interesting part to the people that Texas drove out of the Big 12, remember, Nebraska, Colorado, A&M, Missouri. Texas's blood is on their hands from all those departures. And I really think that when you look at that, and now Texas all of a sudden, after dominating a league, just being like an uncontrollable ego in a league for so long, now all of a sudden, they got to go just be a rank and file member? Like they're just sitting in class with their hands folded on their desk. You know, Mr. Sankey, can I go to the bathroom? That has not been Texas.
Pete Thamel on their college football podcast yesterday for Yahoo Sports talking about Texas. You know, now at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you. It sounds selfish. Sounds like you're a complete jerk, but you always have to look out for number one because at the end of the day, no one else is going to. Someone else is not going to make, when push comes to shove, the best decision for you. They're going to make the best decision for them as well. So that's why loyalty will only go so far. You can remain loyal to other programs or conferences, but the first opportunity that they have to do the best thing for them, which in turn would screw you, you know they would do it as well. So I understand you always have to do what's best for you. And for Texas, that state, they've been losing a lot of recruits to the SEC. In fact, I read something. I think it's all 15 of the top recruits out of Texas chose SEC schools, if that was accurate. Right? So if you're the Longhorns, Texas A&M, they're benefiting. They're getting some of those guys. You're not. They're all choosing the SEC. And we know Texas has so much talent. You're one of the local schools. You should be able to keep that talent local. So you figure, well, if we get into the SEC, some of these kids will then want to stay home and come play for us. We'll get even better talent, and that will help us turn this program around, which has been underperforming for 15 years. So I get it, right, that at a certain point, you do have to do what's best for you. You have to look out for yourself first and foremost. And also, for Texas, as big of a brand as they are, not everybody in the Big 12 can do this. Texas and Oklahoma are the two teams that can take advantage of this, and that's kind of their reward for what they've done over the years to build up that program. And if, say, Kansas State had the same opportunity, they probably would go and do it. But the concern is, you know, was it necessary? Maybe for Texas. Oklahoma, they're doing just fine in the Big 12. Is it necessary? Are they two struggling programs? Do they need the boost? Was the conference already falling apart to begin with? They had a bail ship, right? They had to go find a new home. Was it necessary to do this? Throw the rest of your conference under the bus and essentially break up the Big 12. And the point that Pete Thamel's making is that the Big 12 has really done everything for them, whether it's the Longhorn Network, whether it was previous realignment, whether it was giving them the top billing of all the games, which they probably deserve anyways. But the Big 12 has always been based around Texas and Oklahoma, two of the founding members. And it'd be very frustrating if, say, you as a company brought in an employee and you gave him everything he wanted and he even changed like the structure of your sales staff or the way your office worked or you changed some of the rules or the way you did business, all for this guy, right? He's a really great salesman. You wanted to bring him in. You thought he'd be great for the company and you just wanted to make him happy. Okay, whatever you need, right? Oh, yeah, we like that idea. Let's do it that way. Right? And then not too long after being hired, like he leaves for another opportunity. It's like, oh, well, we just changed everything around here for you. And you're not going to stick around for it. You know, we've been helping you out. Like these other teams in the Big 12 could say that. You know, the decisions have been made to benefit Oklahoma and Texas, and we've gone along with it. Sure, maybe we benefit in the process, but, you know, we're also willing to put you guys first. Just like, it's like, you know, we hired you. We put you first ahead of all the other employees who have been here longer. We've done things to change the company for you. Now you're just going to bail on us after, you know, 6 months? And obviously Texas has been in the Big 12 for a longer period than 6 months, but, you know, you get the idea. Where it still feels too soon. I saw somebody compare it on social media. They call Texas the rich son who ruins the father's company. Right, they take over the father's company and they put it under. They don't know what they're doing. They're making bad decisions and they're just entitled brats that only got in that position because of who they are and they ruin it for everybody else. Like Colin Farrell in Horrible Bosses. and the rich son who've had have been given everything, and then just totally screw it up for everybody else. They're handed over their father's company. They didn't have to work a day in their life, and everything that their father built up, right? They just ruined it, made it crumble. And now with Texas and Oklahoma on their way out, by 2025, the Big 12 will at minimum look drastically different, and certainly at worst won't even exist. We won't even have a Big 12 anymore. And I'm not just talking about because they'll become like, you know, the Elite Eight or whatever they would change their name to, depending on how many teams they have. But I don't know if it would even be a conference, that grouping of teams. I think they all have to go find a new home. And for somebody like Texas with their big brand and now running off to the SEC to try to get some assistance. Now, Joe, you're an Oklahoma fan. I know you said that you look forward to eventually. I mean, with the way schedules work, it'll probably only happen once a decade. But Oklahoma coming to play in Columbia to play the Gamecocks. What about the opposite? What would you miss most, if anything, about Oklahoma being in the Big 12?
Well, for one, the Bedlam series is probably going to be in question.
Yeah.
Their rivalry with Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big one. But I'm also thinking, if OU and Texas, you know, do end up getting membership in, do you think A&M and Mizzou will say, no, we're not going through this again, and bolt back to the Big 12, and can the Big 12 survive maybe trying to talk those two institutions to rejoining? Maybe Nebraska might be interested in coming back. And also maybe one or two up-and-coming programs in the mid-majors, such as Cincinnati or Memphis, come in and either revive the Big 12, and, you know, will the Big 12 end up taking a hit as far as their status as a Power 5 conference?
Yeah, which is the concern. That, sure, they may go grab some other teams, but then would just become like a Group of 5 conference. I guess, therefore, it'd be a Group of 6. And they would be making as much money. That's the other concern with Oklahoma and Texas. You know, like they're compared to the AAC, who I think those teams get like $5 million. So that would be the big concern, is that when you lose Texas and Oklahoma, there goes your revenue, and you'd be making the money equivalent to a Group of 5. I don't think a Cincinnati would move the needle, unless we'll see what they do over the next 4 seasons. If you could get a Texas A&M, that would certainly help. If you could get a Nebraska, that would certainly help.
Something else I would be doing. Mm-hmm. For football, I would definitely be talking to Brigham Young. And even though they're happy with the conference, you know, they belong to for the other sports, you could probably pick up a big non-football school like Wichita State or something like that for those other programs, which will help in basketball, give Kansas some competition.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since BYU does have a nationwide, you know, following, especially among Mormon, the Mormon population, you know, sort of like Notre Dame and BC and USC do with the Catholics.
Yeah, and the concern, of course, always with BYU is, you know, they have to make sure wherever they're going won't schedule any of their games on Sunday. That's been a problem in the past. And for Texas A&M specifically, they're obviously the most unhappy about this, but I just don't know if it's worth leaving the SEC for. I mean, obviously, the SEC is the best. That's where everyone wants to be. Not often does somebody turn down money, right? Like willingly go and take a pay cut at another company. Now, if you're unhappy, right? If you're that unhappy and you don't, and money isn't everything, and you say, fine, I'd rather go work for that other company where I'll be happier and make less money. But just when you get to that point, when you reach essentially the pinnacle in terms of conferences, they're not winning national championships, but they're in the SEC where they want to be. The recruiting has improved. Their program has even improved. I just don't know if you take that step back.
Or how about this? What if they say, hey, this might be a good, a good move for us to maybe go back to the Big 12. I'm talking about A&M and Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
This might be, in the short term, you know, a reduction in pay. It's like taking another job for a pay cut that might actually help you in the long run.
Yeah, but I don't know if it will. I don't know if it will help in the long run. I think the Big 12 is certainly on shaky ground. That's another concern. Do you really want to go over there? Like, do you want to go to the company that's not doing too well to begin with? And then we'll see what the TV contract brings, because that's always the big selling point. And I just don't think it'd be very much for the Big 12 without those two teams. Coming up, we will get to my main takeaway for each of the Southern Conference football teams with the season 5 weeks away. We will get to that coming up. And we'll also talk some quarterbacks coming up in a little bit as well. Anthony Triash from Pro Football Focus will join us to break down the quarterback position for the upcoming year. Get to that as well. It's the More Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job. you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Well, it's with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, you have a chance to save a life and give blood this Friday at Cruz Chevrolet. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Cruz Chevy this Friday. Going on from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. as mentioned. Sign up today at redcrossblood.org and use the sponsor code CRUZ in all caps. Walk-ins are welcome, but they do prefer appointments. RedCrossBlood.org online, sponsor code CREW. And all donors will receive a complimentary certificate for an oil and filter change, tire rotation, and more. We'll get to the Southern Conference stuff coming up in a little bit. We'll also, in a few minutes coming up in a little bit as well, talk some quarterbacks with Anthony Treish. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But I did see this. This has been making the rounds. This has gone viral, this idea about showering, right? How often should you shower? How often should you shower? How often should you shower or bathe your kids? Because there's a celebrity couple that has gone viral because they don't believe in bathing, apparently. And it's Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis, who you may remember from That 70s Show or all the other things they've done over the years. And this is really taken off because in an interview, I don't know how this came up in the interview. I originally saw this on CNN.com, and then everyone has it. It's gone viral. It's become a big story online. People are so shocked and kind of disgusted by this. But they have kids. They have two kids together, ages 6 and 4. And Mila Kunis, she is not from, I forget where she was born originally, and I don't know how old she was when her family came here to the United States. But she did say when she was growing up, she didn't have hot water growing up, so she didn't shower very much. I get that as a kid.
Well, she was born in the former Soviet Union.
Oh, okay. I knew she was from somewhere else, or born somewhere else. So I get it, right? If you don't have hot water, or you don't have as much access to water as, say, we do in the majority of this country, all right, I get it. You may not be as motivated to shower as often. But now, they're rich celebrities. I'm sure they have multiple homes, beautiful homes, great showers. They have kids. They're raising kids now. And I'm sure they have, or at least could have, in case they're busy or don't want to do it or whatever the reason may be, I'm sure they could have some sort of in-house, you know, maid or nurse or somebody to look after the kids with them. But in this interview, they revealed that that they don't shower very often and their kids don't shower very often. Mila Kunis says, "I wasn't that parent that bathed my newborns ever. And now that they are older," Ashton then said that they have a system. "If you can see the dirt on them, then clean them. Otherwise, there's no point." That's what he said about his kids, 6 and 4. "They only need to shower once they are so dirty that you can actually notice it, that you can see it. You can see the dirt on them. Otherwise, why shower every day? You're just wasting water. Right? They're not dirty. We can't see the dirt. No need to shower." Ashton himself says, and this is the worst, but I get it, kids. You know, look, some kids can be kind of grimy or nasty, whatever. They don't want to shower all the time. I'm sure it's a pain to get them in the bathroom, to give them a bath. All right, fine. You don't want to give them a bath all that time. I understand that. But Ashton Kutcher himself, who is like, You know, he's like on a – women love him. Good-looking dude, celebrity. Always been like a little bit of, you know, like a sex symbol over the years. He says he doesn't shower. He says, every day I wash my armpits and my crotch and nothing else ever. That's all he does.
That's kind of common in Europe.
Yeah?
Yeah, they regularly wash, you know, those types of areas and their feet and stuff like that. And, of course, they use bidets in a lot of homes over mm-hmm. there. But the actual showering, I think they only keep it down to a few times a week. And that's largely because if you use too much water, you have to pay penalties.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I get that. But Kutcher doesn't have that excuse. They're millionaires, both of them, living here in this country. And he was born here, right? He's from the Chicago area originally. Get in that shower. He said, this is the worst part of all. All right, you don't want to bathe every day. I don't agree with this, but I could bend a little bit. But he says after working out, he'll just throw some water on his face to get the salt out of his face. And that's it. He won't shower after working out.
I hope they have a pool in their backyard.
Yes, at least, a minimum. Because that's disgusting. I've shared, like, I'm trying to get into shape again. So I go run. It's disgusting. I go running every day. I couldn't imagine just splashing my face with water and then getting into bed afterwards. I'm nasty. I'm sweaty, sticky. You just don't feel comfortable. I want to get in the shower. Now, I'll be honest. I don't jump right into the shower. I'm the same type of person I've said before, right? I like to decompress a little bit. I get back from the gym. I don't want to jump right in the shower. I want to sit down and relax a little bit. Rest my muscles. And I end up just laying on the floor for a while because I don't want to sit on the furniture when I'm all sweaty. But eventually, I'm getting in that shower. I'm not just going to splash water on my face and then call it a day. I understand why this has gone viral. It's disgusting. You don't want to bathe your kids every day? Okay, fine. I can give you that. But imagine, I wouldn't want to be on set with Ashton Kutcher anymore. Doesn't shower. After workouts, even. Right? Because you stink. That's when you really be smelly. You got to go in there and bathe yourself. And even if you can't see the dirt, sometimes you just got to go in there and, you know, you got to get, like, the dead skin off of you. Or the dirt, you can see it eventually because it's piling up. Take care of that beforehand. I was a little turned off. I don't know if I can watch an Ashton Kutcher movie anymore. I don't think I can look at Mila Kunis the same anymore. She said she washes her face twice a day, but she doesn't shower. Got to make sure the face is looking good. Forget about the rest of the body and what's going on there. We'll talk quarterbacks and get ready for the upcoming football season with Anthony Triash from Pro Football Focus next.
I would say if we ever do meet these people, I'll let them know now. Don't be upset if I don't shake hands with you
That's
or
right.
stand too close to you.
Yes. When we interview Ashton Kutcher, we'll just have to make sure it's over the phone. We can't have him in the studio. It can't be a face-to-face interaction. When we talk about his Chicago Bears this year, just get him on the phone. So we don't have to. We won't be able to smell it through the phone. We'll talk with Anthony Triash when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Softly through the sun in a broken stone age dawn, you fly.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. College football season for at least the Citadel and a lot of other schools begin 5 weeks from tomorrow. We'll talk about the Southern Conference coming up a little bit later on, but with college football right around the corner, talk some quarterbacks for the upcoming college football season. With Anthony Triash from Pro Football Focus. He's a senior college analyst at PFF. Follow him on Twitter at PFF_Anthony, and he's with us now. Anthony, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Been wanting to get you on the show because I was reading through the rankings for Pro Football Focus of all the starting quarterbacks in college football this year, and would love to run through some of them with you. The belief is that Spencer Rattler, year two, Lincoln Riley, you know, he's the favorite to win the Heisman. Many believe he'll be the number one pick. Do you agree with the assessment of Spencer Rattler when trying to pick out the best quarterback in college football this year?
Oh, for sure. And you know, it's been pretty interesting kind of watching the public belief and view of Spencer Rattler even since the season ended, because I feel like more people have been starting to buy him, as they should be, because I think he's in that, you know, that Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields type of elite rare tier of college quarterbacks. I mean, just this past season, his PFF grade is up at 92.5. And considering he was a redshirt freshman, I mean, that's quite astonishing. I mean, we've never seen a redshirt freshman or even a true freshman produce at the level he did this past season for Oklahoma. And, you know, granted, he did have some, you know, undisciplined mistakes early on in the season. But, again, it was his first year starting. You can expect that. I mean, most people remember the game-sealing interception against Kansas State and Iowa State, and then the small benching against Texas for a drive or two. But, you know, what he did collectively throughout the season, he was consistently an elite passer. And even though he did have those few, you know, moments undisciplined, like I said, and he can get better with his footwork in the pocket, he may invite in pressure, you know, walk into sacks every once in a while. The arm talent he has is truly special. I mean, it is very reminiscent. His ability to play outside of structure, very reminiscent of Patrick Mahomes. He is so effective in that way. We've never actually seen a quarterback produce a grade outside of structure than Spencer Rattler did this past season, and that's going back to 2014. So I think he is in that rare elite tier, and he's definitely my bet to win the Heisman, be the number one overall pick next year, and I'd be very surprised if anyone to throw them from that spot.
Yeah, certainly high praise, and we have seen Lincoln Riley with these great quarterbacks have been able to get to the playoffs. So I imagine, after hearing what you just said about Spencer Rattler, do you see Oklahoma, led by this quarterback, as a playoff team this year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Not only do I think they're a playoff team, I think, you know, they're my preseason pick to win the national title. I really do think, you know, with him at the helm, that they can do it. I mean, that offense is going to be very, very good this upcoming season. I mean, they have a well-rounded receiving unit there, led by Marvin Mims, who last year, as a true freshman, was one of the most productive and highest-graded wide receivers in the Power 5, too. And then they also have tons of guys with potential behind him, too. The offensive line did lose some key pieces, but they're still going to be one of the better groups and units in college football. They also welcomed back running back Kenny Brooks, who did not play at all last season, but back in 2018, 2019, had one of the highest explosive run rates in college football. And so I think this is going to be a very explosive passing offense. I think, you know, really the big concern with that team is the secondary, just because last year it wasn't anything spectacular. And then they did lose, you know, their three best defensive backs, too. But at the end of the day, they do return, I would say, the best pass rush in college football, led by Nick Benito, the edge defender who led all FBS edge defenders in pass rush grade, win rate, and pressure rate last season. And, you know, we did find him actually publishing an article about this on PFF.com on Monday. You know, the whole coverage versus pass rush debate, you know, it's a little bit different in college football, especially at the Power 5 level. Pass rushing, you know, that really does correlate to defensive success when it doesn't so much so at the NFL level. And so I think they can get by with a defense that has a strong pass rush and weak coverage unit, because I think that kind of makes up for, you know, an average group. I think they have a chance to be slightly above average. So I think as long as that offense maximizes their potential to be a truly elite, you know, I'm most confident in that team above all. And, you know, if, you know, say Alabama returned Mac Jones or actually had an established passer, I think it would be a different story, because taking quarterback out of the equation, no one's sniffing that roster. I mean, from head to toe outside of quarterback, that's the most talented group. But again, even though Bryce Young is a very promising player, one of the highest rated quarterback recruits, according to 247, over the last decade or so, I mean, we just don't know. There's so much unknown there with him. He did flash a little bit in that garbage time he did get last year. He also made a lot of, you know, head-scratching mistakes in that mop-up duty that really should not be made in that small stretch. Took around 30 dropbacks, took, I think, around 7 sacks, had multiple turnover-worthy plays. But, you know, you did see that ability to, you know, make something out of nothing, especially when getting knocked off rhythm, you know. And so I think he does have the traits to get there and be that elite guy. It's just, you know, are they consistently going to get that elite quarterback on a weekly basis? And I think that's the biggest question with Alabama and Ohio State as well, and even Clemson. Yeah, I mean, all three are welcoming in new starting quarterbacks. Clemson has probably the most promising in a bunch with DJ Uiagalelei, just because we did get to see him start last season for a couple starts when Trevor Lawrence was out with COVID. You know, they were really good, but again, it goes back to, can he produce like Trevor Lawrence on a weekly basis? And that's big unknown. So, you know, CJ Stroud up at Ohio State, those three quarterbacks have immense potential. But at the end of the day, we still have not seen them to be able to showcase that elite ability on a weekly basis. Spencer Rattler's already shown that. And so that's why I'm going ahead with Oklahoma as my preseason pick. And I think there's also, too, I should mention Georgia. They definitely have a national title contending roster outside of quarterback, but they have plenty of question marks, too, with JT Daniels. Even though his debut with Georgia last year against Mississippi State was one of the best performances we saw all year long by a quarterback, That's really the only above average performance we've ever seen from him in his collegiate career. And if he, you know, even going back and analyzing his 2018 true freshman season, you know, it was with USC, a different program. He was a true freshman, but it was at a level that was so below average and at that poor stage that if he were to able to recover and produce at an elite, you know, national contending level, Heisman contending level, he would be truly an outlier. We've never seen anyone make the jump from where he started out his collegiate career to a Heisman level. So, I mean, it would be a complete unprecedented thing for JT Daniels to lead Georgia to a national title based off what we've already seen from him, you know, over the course of his collegiate career. So, and I think that's the beauty of this upcoming college football season, right? We have all the fans coming back, hopefully a normal year with few, if not none, cancellations. You know, that's exciting in itself, but the uncertainty at quarterback across the board in college football, it's going to make for a very compelling college football season. I think there's so much more unknown than a lot of people think.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that, but my first follow-up would be what you just said about JT Daniels. So it sounds like you'd like to see a larger sample size first, right, before you buy into what we saw from him last year?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, knock on him too much just because, you know, like I said, that performance against Mississippi State, I remember watching it, and, you know, that first drive, I hit up one of our fellow college analysts, Seth Galina, and that after that first drive, I said, this is USC, JT Daniels. He hasn't changed any, and then all of a sudden something clicked after that first drive, and he was just kind of playing out of his mind. And then the next three games, was hoping we'd consistently see somewhat close to that form. I mean, he produced at such a level that you're not going to see multiple performances like that in a given year. But he never really even came close to matching that. I mean, the next three performances were just kind of average at best. And then that bowl game against Cincinnati, a truly legit defense, really the only legit defense he faced in that four games he saw, he really faltered. I mean, those last three games overall, he had a sub-70 passing grade. He had multiple turnover-worthy plays against Cincinnati. And so I think we just need to see a lot more from JT Daniels before we can confidently say, you know, he's the real deal. And that's why I do think, you know, even the, you know, the Georgia national contention talk, the Heisman chatter with JT Daniels, and even the 2022 NFL draft talk with him as well, I think it's kind of getting a little out of hand. I think the expectations for him are a little too lofty right now. But, you know, we'll see. Hopefully he proves me wrong. But I'm just not as confident in him as I am some other guys.
You mentioned something that we've been talking about all offseason, about how this college football season could be really interesting and maybe unpredictable because a lot of the top teams are replacing quarterbacks, the most important position. You mentioned DJ as having the most upside of these new quarterbacks. I'll ask you about him specifically in just a moment. But for now, I want to ask you about the opposite of, say, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, even Texas A&M will have a new quarterback. A lot of teams will have a new quarterback. Which spot would you be most concerned about trying to replace the production they got from a year ago at that position?
Yeah, you know, that's a very tough question because all the quarterbacks they're replacing are, I mean, when looking at the PFF database and looking at quarterback seasons, all of the quarterbacks they're replacing are at the very top. I think the most concern, though, that I would have is probably with Alabama and Bryce Young just because the level of the Alabama and Mac Jones produced this past season, I mean, it was truly unlike anything we've ever seen. I came away from the 2019 season when Joe Burrow led LSU to the national title. I came away saying, you know, we're never going to see an offense like this again for at least, you know, many, many years. And next thing you know, Alabama and Mac Jones, Steve Sarkisian and Devonta Smith, they shattered that. I mean, not necessarily shattered it, but they beat them out. I mean, in every form, and they had a higher successful pass play rate. Mac Jones had a higher passing grade for the year. I mean, he never really did have a bad performance. And the fact that Steve Sarkisian, not one time as play caller for Alabama, even going back to 2019, he's led him to an efficient passing offense, so producing positive expected points added per pass play. That is quite absurd. And I think they were producing at such a level that is very hard to sustain. They're going to see some type of regression this year. It's just all about, you know, how much are they going to regress. So I think Bryce Young probably has the most pressure on him of the bunch. And I think he recognizes that, too, because he is the starting quarterback for Alabama. And even, too, looking at some of the NIL money that he's already gotten, I mean, game, it's the Alabama way, as a lot of coaches have been saying throughout the media day. So I think that's the I think all those are passing offense with new starting quarterbacks. I think they're all going to regress with these new guys. And I think the most concerning and perhaps the most severe that we might see is Bryce Young. And that's not to say I don't think they're going to make the college football playoff. I definitely think they're a top five team. I mean, they should be viewed as the favorite in the SEC for now. just because, like I said, outside of the quarterback uncertainty, there's very few bones to pick with this Alabama roster. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, that has the potential to be the most severe regression of the bunch. But, you know, again, this isn't because I don't believe in Bryce Young. It's just more about the people he was replacing were so good. It's going to be incredibly hard for him to do that, you know, right out of the gate as his first year as starter.
Big shoes for DJ to fill at Clemson as well, of course, replacing Trevor Lawrence. What did you see from him in his playing time last year or just on tape that you come away really impressed with DJ now being the full-time starter at Clemson?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest takeaway with him is that he's got an absolute cannon for an arm. I mean, he's throwing lasers left and right against Notre Dame and Boston College in those two games. I mean, he actually led efficient passing offenses in those two as well, even though he didn't really produce at an elite level. Made the right decisions. I mean, there were times that Clemson made it a little bit easier for him. We'd like to see him kind of take the training wheels off, so to speak. You know, they're throwing a lot of screens. We don't really see him throw over the middle of the field. But at the end of the day, he did get the job done in those two outings. So I'm excited to see what he does. There was a little bit of an accuracy concern with him, but that was mostly a mechanical issue that I think is going to be cleaned up. So, you know, I think just because that we've actually seen him start more than one time, I think that's why I'm most confident in him kind of replacing the starter. And even though Trevor Lawrence was the consensus top guy in this past draft, you know, looking at the offenses that were led between him and Justin Fields at Ohio State and Mac Jones at Alabama, Trevor Lawrence's Clemson-led offense was perhaps the most inefficient of the bunch. And that's not to say, you know, I think Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback of the three, but I think that was just kind of the offense by design. So I think it's going to be a little bit easier for him, and that's why I'm a little bit more confident in him. But even then, at the end of the day, like I said, there's still some uncertainty there just because we don't have a full season-long set of data with him. And two, I mean, I think there's also some other concerns with Clemson outside of quarterback too, as well. You know, you look at the running back position. I think a lot of people, when they think PFF, they think running backs don't matter. They don't think that they're a valuable piece. And while that's true for the NFL, it's not in college football at all whatsoever. I mean, Travis Etienne was one of the most valuable non-quarterbacks in college football since he emerged in 2018, and he was a very effective ball carrier. Clemson actually had the most efficient running offense in the Power Five over the last three seasons. And it was so, you know, by country mile that it's going to be very hard to sustain. And I think there's promising guys in that running back room, definitely. But he was such a good player and difference maker that I think that's going to see some regression as well. So I think those are the two areas to watch. The wide receiver room, the health there, there's definitely a lot of potential. I'm excited to see what Justin Ross does after missing all of last year and Joe Ngata too. I think he's going to be a breakout player after having an injury-riddled 2020. So there's definitely a lot of potential there. But there are some, other concerning aspects of that Clemson team outside of quarterback.
I only got 30 seconds for you, but the better quarterback this year in the ACC, do you think it'll be DJ or Sam Howell at UNC?
Ooh, that is a tough one. I think it's going to be Sam Howell just because, you know, he's already proven it, and so I think I have to kind of go with him, but I'm not going to be surprised if it's DJ. I mean, I'm obviously going to be looking for Sam Howell to kind of prop up the guys he has around him just with losing the slew of supporting cast of playmakers that he had at his disposal. So I think that right there, that's just another contributing fact to, you know, the beautiful part of this upcoming college football season, because even North Carolina and Sam Howell, the second best returning quarterback in college football, there's some concerns there.
He's Anthony Tresh from Pro Football Focus, senior college analyst on Twitter at @PFF_Anthony. Awesome stuff, Anthony. We'll have to have you on as we continue to get closer to the season once again, because there's so much here to break down. But appreciate the analysis and appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Anthony Tresh from Pro Football Focus. We'll wrap up Hour 2 next. The More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up Hour 2 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Pro Football Focus's Anthony Tresh online on Twitter at @PFF_Anthony, one of their senior college analysts. And I appreciate the insight. Now, as he said, we've talked about JT Daniels the last couple of weeks, the Georgia quarterback, who I think finally gives Kirby the quarterback to get him over those hurdles to try to finally win a national championship. But as Anthony said, he's not as high on JT Daniels because he wants to see more from him compared to how he looked when he was at USC before transferring to Georgia, and then comparing that to only the four games last year. That's not a big enough sample size for him at Georgia just yet for him to buy in to what we saw, while also discussing how impressive he looked, right? But still, you want something a little more than the four-game sample. He has JT Daniels listed as the 23rd best quarterback in the country heading into this season. But I would say we've seen quarterbacks in recent years pull off these turnarounds, right? Joe Burrow from 1 year to the next. Even a Mac Jones played a couple of games at the end of that year with Alabama, three-star recruit, nobody thought much of him, was fantastic last year. You can even say Justin Fields a little bit. Couldn't get on the field in Georgia, transfers to Ohio State, the rest is history. And at the NFL level, during this same time period, what about Josh Allen? In one offseason, had the biggest turnaround for an NFL quarterback we've ever seen. So now, more than ever, we're seeing quarterbacks. Sometimes they just have to change locations. Sometimes they just need an extra year of experience. They improve rapidly. JT Daniels could be that next one for Georgia. Hour 3 next. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.